The Waini writers acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians whose ancestral lands we gather on. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of the Kaurna people to country and extend this acknowledgement to Torres Strait Islander and all First Nations people. We respect and value their past, present and ongoing connection to the land and cultural beliefs.
This podcast episode includes content that is not suitable for ages 16 and under, such as swearing and sexual content.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Waini Writers. I am Abby Guy, and I'm here with my co-host,
Harry Stewart.
Yay, and we're back again for another episode.
Look at us go. Yay. Still alive, still alive, thriving. Still kicking. Still haven't killed each other yet.
No, that I didn't even think about that, but yeah. That is on the cards.
I was going to say, because this is episode 20, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. And that's a long time to be sitting in a room or collaborating on a project.
And talking at each other.
Yeah. At each other. At each whoa. Other. With each other.
With each other. My mistake.
At? You think I talk at you? Hang on.
No. But This episode, we're being whiny again.
Yeah. we're going to be negative. Negative.
We're being true to our thing. But we're just talking about book pet peeves or things that make us put a book down. So things that we dislike in books, pretty much.
Yeah, and I think we should say that, like, these things sometimes appear in books that we do like.
Oh, for sure.
And have finished.
Yeah, these are just pet peeves, and when it comes up in a book, I'm like, really?
Yeah, and then sometimes these are things that take over a good premise of a book and make us not finish them.
Exactly, yeah. There's a few things here that have made me put down a book, so that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and continuously. Like, a lot of them, I think, are trope-based as well.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any particular tropes that you hate? Like you won't even pick the book up because you don't like the trope?
I don't really vibe insta-love.
Yeah, fair enough. I also am not a huge fan of insta-love.
I'm not a huge fan of insta-love. I read books that are insta-love, but I feel like it can be overused.
Yeah,
or poorly described without experience.
Okay, yes, yeah.
I think insta-love exists. There are a moment when you will just instantly connect with somebody.
See, I don't believe in insta love. Like, I can believe in, like, there's an instant connection, but I don't believe in insta.
Actually, maybe that is the better way to put it.
Yeah. Because,
like, can you say that insta love is something like a celebrity crush? Because, you know, when some people are just like, that person's so gorgeous and they're so hot and I love their music. So they tend to be in love with that person without actually knowing anything about them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay.
You know,
maybe that's my issue, is that I feel like insta-love is so surface level and you don't actually know that person as an individual, therefore you don't really love that person.
Yeah.
Well, I get the point of an insta-love would be to slowly, after the insta-love, you get to know the person.
You get to know the person. There's a really lovely quote that I have been using recently in my work, which is that when you love somebody, you don't love them instantly. The whole point of the relationship is how you grow to love each other.
Oh, that's nice.
And I was like, that's really sweet because it makes you some, you know, like you do go into these, especially as romance readers, people go in to watch them fall in love, but there's never really that much about growing to love each other.
Yeah.
And that really is at the heart of a relationship because it's never easy all the time.
I must admit, though, there is something, I feel like this might be why insta love is popular, but I could be wrong. Mm. But I think there is something so desirable about the idea that you meet someone, they instantly love you, like they are instantly obsessed with you, and like just the idea of someone meeting you and being like, that's my one,
that's the one,
that's it for me,
that's the person I'm gonna go through all
which
this
is also
for.
Very similar with your fated mates, right?
Fated mates I kind of like, because I guess it does give you that feeling, it's so appealing.
Yeah, it's that feeling that there is someone out there for me specifically.
I think I'm really big as a person on the idea of just being like, yeah, this is it. Like, yeah, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah,
like, my partner and I have only been together for like 14 months, maybe, or 16 months actually.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, he's the one. Yep, this is good.
This is it. I don't need to put
in any more effort to other things. We're staying together. There's no decision otherwise. Yeah. You know?
Is everyone like that though when you're in the relationship?
I feel like this
is where it becomes obvious that I don't have a lot of relationship experience.
I feel like with my
expose myself.
Well, if I say it, it's rude.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know. My past relationships, I don't think they've been like that. I wasn't like, yeah, we're sticking down the barrel. Yeah, right. You know, I feel like maybe it is like a, it is different this time.
This is
I go maybe it is different because I don't want to sound like one of those like, you know, teenagers that's like, I just love her and we are going to spend eternity together.
But love always feels cringy, right?
It does. It's so cringy. You can just be such a stupid little piece of shit when you're with the when you're with someone you love. Yeah. And you can be so cringy. Like, it's ridiculous.
Those rose-coloured glasses sometimes like we do talk about, right?
Sometimes I come home exhausted and I do like an express, like a really big sad expression on my face. And honestly, to somebody outside of my relationship, they'd be like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is a child.
Yeah.
But I'll come home and I come home and I'd be like, you know, like, that's dumb. That's cringy as fuck. But I do it daily.
I don't see it as cringy.
Yeah, see, I just think it's love.
Your partner like, and you're like, I'm having shit jokes.
Makes me feel like a child. But you should be able to be like a child with that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think,
see, I do that, but with my mother.
No, that's fair.
Which is like,
I do that with family as well, though. Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. They go like, what's wrong? And I go, like, you know, help me.
Yeah, I'm having a shit day.
I'm having a shit day. Somebody just give me a massage.
Yeah, right?
You know, I just want a cup of tea.
So Insta-love.
So Insta-love's probably one that I tend to steer away from unless the plot will make me think that the Insta-love is going to be successful.
Yeah.
So you can usually tell an Insta-love based on a book cover or a blurb. And I think if it's a bad little blurb summary, which is so superficial, I might go, I just don't see Insta-love working in that setting. We'll not be purchasing, we'll not be reading.
Right, wow.
Which is so dicky.
From the get-go.
Yeah, from the get-go. Yeah. I'm pretty big on that, yeah. Right. I love a good book cover. That's a pick up or a put down for me. Is I'm it? Not going to lie.
You judge a book by its cover?
Oh my God, yes.
I've never understood that saying because I judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, they do. Do you know how hard those people work on those covers as well?
If it's got a terrible cover, I don't want to pick it up and I don't want it on my shelf.
The point of it is to appeal to the
reader,
right?
That is the entire point.
Like, that is the entire point.
I do understand that there is a good novel inside some shit covers.
100%.
But I am going to pick up. That's 100%. Why special editions are so popular, right?
Yeah.
Because the cover is gorgeous and people just want that piece of art.
Look at books like Game of Thrones by George R. R. Martin. That's not
boring.
An appealing book cover.
But they appeal to that specific audience.
That's very true, but it's not like I don't really know what it's going to be about or have any like attachment. Are they great books? I fucking froth them. Yeah. But I'm like, it's not appealing. It's not an appealing book cover. And I know this is a different genre. Checkmate by Ali Hazelwood. That is such a fucking good.
See, I hate it.
You hate it? I love that book cover.
It is
fucking beautiful.
It looks stick and paste to me. It looks like stickers. Like, I don't.
It's so cliche, but I adore it.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I love the Akatar book cover.
Oh, yeah.
That is so appealing to me. It is so satisfying.
I do not like. I'm looking up the Checkmate one so I can look at it. You like that?
That's so cute.
Oh, I don't like it.
Love it.
I don't like it at all.
I don't know if it has anything to do with chess.
The book. The whole book has to do with chess. They both play chess.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't read the book. Do I own the
book? I've heard it's really good.
Yeah. I bought it because it was fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, right. See, I don't like the cover.
I love the color theme of the whole thing. And do you know what I like? This sounds like a stupid plug. I love the Kit McBride covers.
Those are beautiful. That is very romance.
Gorgeous.
Like, kind of kitsch, but not very. Like, they're done well.
They're just done well. And the new Someone Else's Bucket List cover out by Simon & Schuster here in Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's so pretty.
I'm trying to think of a Study in Drowning for me is a beautiful cover. Both
editions.
That's
the House on the Hill, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh,
but there's
my God.
Another edition
Katrina
as
Ward's,
well. Katrina
Last
Ward's.
Last House on Needless Street.
Beautiful
book
cover.
Cover is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my
I really
God.
Do think that a book cover.
It is a pick up or put down for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think
of
the book cover that I hate. It's just a shit book cover.
Yeah, maybe not if I've bought it and then move on. Bride by Ali Hanlon.
You don't like the book cover? I prefer the book cover to Bride than Checkmate.
No.
I do.
No.
I do.
That is a poor transformation of the wolf into her hair.
Is that what's happening?
Yeah, the wolf's behind her hair. And they're the same colour. And they like morph into each other. And I'm like, ugh. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work to me.
I just looked up Bride and it's given me Brides. I should add Ali Hazelwood. It's not in her hair. It's just behind her. So you're saying the colour difference should have been...
The colour difference should have been bigger, I think. And I think it looks like it's supposed to be like one. The colour, they're the exact same colour, her hair and the wolf.
They are, yeah. No, I like it. I like it better than Checkmate. I like the colour scheme.
I like the colour scheme. I'll give her the colour scheme.
Yeah, that's clever.
I don't like I love that now we're talking about book covers because honestly, they are so fucking cool. I love when a book cover is good solely because of the fact that I know how much work's gone into it. Yeah, I know that the authors approved it, which means that they're like, well, that's the best option.
Yeah.
Like, and two, because, three, because it works.
Mm-hmm.
It does exactly what I want it to do. Mm-hmm. And if it's effective, I'm buying that book. Sarah J. Maas's, what's the new thing called? Crescent City or whatever it is. Because those book covers are gorgeous. They look expensive. They look like they're going to do exactly what they do. Another one that I adore is the book cover of Boy Meets Boy by David Levithan. It is a plain yellow book cover with a fucking, what is it? It's a plain yellow book cover with like a paper tear in the middle with red inside, and it's a love heart on the front of the whole fucking book. And I'm sorry, it's the shit. It's so fucking pretty. Let me try and find it for you as well, just so that it makes a lot more sense. It's so simple, but it's so good.
I have not seen it, so I'm going to need to. You are going to need to look it up for me. Well, I'm trying to think of. I'm really trying to think of covers.
Look.
See, I don't like that.
You don't like it? I think it's so effective.
No, I'm like, I don't it's so like cute. It.
They have this one as well.
I like that one better.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit. They did this.
So
one
sorry
as well.
For our audio listeners. Yeah. See, I like just any of those better than the.
It's really
than
simple.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I despise the book cover. For our anthology, and I know you do too.
Yeah, if you've seen that, I don't like it because it was a 5-minute interpretation and it became the full cover.
Of all of our ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just put in really shittily into what we wanted to do.
I like fantasy book covers. But that's, like, they really appeal to me.
Yeah.
But, like, I love dragons and anything in that genre, so, like, it's going to appeal to me.
I like the Aragorn covers for talking dragons.
Oh, yeah.
They're really pretty. Like, different coloured dragons on the front and the whole books, colour of them. That's cool. I don't like movie covers or TV show
that
adaptation
covers.
That is
a pet peeve for me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The minute that there is, like...
I don't want those additions.
Real people. Lots of people say real... Yeah, I don't understand why they... I mean, I do. They're remarketing it as if you've seen the movie, now you've got the book that has the movie cover on it.
That matches that.
I just prefer the originals.
Yeah.
100% of the time.
100%. Because it makes it feel like I read the book before it was popular.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really important for my self-esteem and my image.
Okay.
What about yourself?
This is one that really gets me. It's multiple point of view in books when the fun stuff is happening in a different point of view. So... Like, you're following one point of view and it's just getting good and then they switch point of view. And you've got to sit through this character. And normally it's a character that I don't enjoy reading. And so every time that chapter opens and you're like, oh, fuck. I got to sit through fucking Steve again.
Don't for read Game of Thrones because that is exactly what it does.
That's
for
what
like
I'm thinking of, Game of Thrones.
Five books. You will get to like a really interesting part of that plot and then you'll go, we're back to this person.
It's
so annoying, especially if they're in a shit. You know, when you're in like a, like, this is how I picture that it happens in ACOTAR later in the books when you get Nesta and stuff.
Yeah.
Because in Game of Thrones, you might have a really interesting plot for a character that you've been following for a great time.
Yeah.
Then you will flip to somebody and you'll be like, ugh. Because that person might be at the beginning of their journey.
Yes,
and
so
you're
like, just not invested.
Don't take me back to the boring parts.
I had this problem with The Atlas Six by Olivia Blake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it was because every character, I didn't like a single character. So I didn't even have that one point of view. It's like six point of views. I didn't even have one that I was like, give me
that
person.
You're begging out
just
for,
bring me
you
back to that person. I was just like, okay, and then on to the next guy who I hate, and then on to the next gal who
here
I
here comes
hate.
Another flat one.
Yeah, right. Here's another character.
That's
that I
so
don't.
Funny. You finished it as well?
No, I put that down.
Yeah, see, that's a DNF.
I couldn't
and
do
it's
it.
Because of that, right?
Yeah.
What was it about them that weren't working for you, though? Like, what were their peeves? Was there cliches in the book that weren't successful?
No, I just think that all of the characters were trying to be... Like, I feel like you're... I don't know. Surely you are supposed to like a couple of the characters, but there's not a single character that I actually connected with
yeah,
or liked or enjoyed or like was rooting for them in any way, shape or form.
They didn't have any agency.
They all had, I can't even describe my hatred for this book properly in full sentences. And I apologize because I've heard really good things about some of Olivia Blake's like later releases. And okay. I really want to read
And this
them.
Was an early book of hers?
To my knowledge. Yeah. The books that after this one were apparently good, but okay. I didn't enjoy this one.
Interesting.
And it's because of the point of views. The point of views were wrong.
I
give me one character to follow and not six terrible characters.
I would admit that like in Game of Thrones, in GOT, you get a lot like by the second book, there's enough shit that's going on that the POVs are working alongside each other but intertwining well.
Mm.
You just have to be prepared for that. There is characters that suck.
I haven't read Game of Thrones.
You'd hate it, I reckon.
But I started reading the first book, and because this is a problem as well, because I watched the TV show before I read the book.
Yeah.
And so the minute that like Daenerys wasn't in the book,
yeah.
Like at the minute I switched from her perspective, I was like, fuck.
Oh, man, here we go.
Sit through this fucking guy.
It's the worst.
I just want Daenerys back. Bring back my queen.
Bring back my bitch. Yeah. Like it's awful. Yeah. It's awful. I also hated.
That's a pet peeve for me.
And I think that's the issue with double POV. I was tossing this up between the book that I'm writing at the moment, my novel,
yes, yeah.
as to whether or not if I go for split POV. And I was like, you know what? Fuck that, man, because I think the book's working at the moment.
Yeah,
and
you don't need it.
Splice that up and I risk putting a character in that I haven't fully developed or don't actually like aren't actually that attached to. And I don't either want him to A, run away with the story,
yeah,
or B, be the shit perspective.
Yeah, I feel like some books it works really well. Like I enjoy that character swap. Like Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefvater.
Great example.
And that switches between the two main characters. You've got Sean. Puck.
Yeah, Puck, his friend. Yeah.
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 I think it's Puck. I could be wrong. But there's the two of them and it switches between the two of them and I care deeply about both characters.
Yeah, and Sean loves horses and Puck talks more about the racing side of things, doesn't he?
Sean is in the races.
Is in the
and
races.
Puck is doing something else.
Yeah. But Sean's all the one that's like, you know, when he's on the horse, do you remember he has all those, like the way that, well, it's actually not Sean that describes it, it's Stiefvater because she's so good at it.
Yes, yeah.
And you get that type of thrill and that experience from one POV, and then you get the important
kind of
background. Here's the, not more, political, but
more about the island that they're existing on from the other character. And so I am rewarded by both point of views on different parts of the story.
And
I think that's probably what Game of Thrones is trying to do. But
I think it is. In the first book, it's not. It's done brilliantly, don't get me wrong. But there are just characters that suck. Bran sucks in the books. Bran fucking sucks. And he sucks in the show.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. It's boring to read
boring, I imagine.
Yeah.
But in Scorpio Races, the two POVs work in conjunction with each other because if it was only one POV, you would be getting either one, the book would be longer.
Yeah.
And you would hate Sean because he keeps telling you about things that aren't important.
Yeah. Sean, I don't need to know about fucking horses, 20 million
and the
pages.
Tide. Like, yeah, why do I need to know about the levels of the tide and why it's important?
Yeah,
but because
yeah.
Puck doesn't have much else to do apart from support Sean.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
It does. So that works. And I do enjoy a little bit in romances when I get a second point of view of the guy and I get to kind of know. But I do prefer when they're just one.
I prefer when they're one. But I think it works in a romance if you've got an incredibly complex relationship where you're like the author's in attempting to cause a massive break in their communication or their like...
And then
you
as the reader get to be privy to both sides of that.
Which
and
works
so you
really
understand.
Well for big plots.
Yeah.
But if it's a, not a small plot, but you know what I mean. Like it's a very by the book, by the Regis rules plot.
Yeah.
I don't need two sides because I think that otherwise you start giving me more information than I need.
Yeah.
And I don't want that assumption.
An excess amount of information. Yeah.
Beautiful Stranger by Christina Lauren, you get two perspectives.
Yeah.
You get her perspective and you get his perspective.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that book was divvied up. Because Christina Christina Lauren, our two friends, Christina and Lauren, I think we've said on the pod before.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting because when you swap perspectives, sometimes you get this inkling that like, oh, I've heard this before.
Yeah, it repeats what doesn't...
I didn't need to know that.
Yes, like, yeah. I've just been told that. That's another peeve.
That's a peeve.
You switch perspectives and now you're back like 2 days ago.
I also know that...
and I already know everything that happens.
Yeah, I also know this is a publisher thing and like an editor thing I've heard that happens when you're in like your developmental edits
before publishing. Yeah, they ask for a second point of view.
Either they ask for a second point of view or they always ask that if you've got a one POV with a big complex thing, that... you get a lovely little thing at the start of a chapter about some stuff that's happened in the past just to keep you updated and make sure you haven't forgot them. And I glance over them sometimes, but it's usually my second read or if I'm going through looking for something, I go, like, say I put down a book and I've only doggy-eared it, which I do all the time. I destroy my books. But it's because I love them.
Yep.
And this happened when I was reading a book recently, two books actually, The Charm Offensive, it happened. Yeah. I went through... and I was going, shit, my dog ear is gone. Where the fuck was I up into this book? And I thought, oh, I'm here because it was this part. And I went, no, actually, I've read this part before. I don't know where it was. Okay, I'll skip forward. Went through a couple chapters going, no, this was a while ago. I remember where this is. Go to the chapter that I was at and it was repeating very similar things to what happened at the thing.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, ah,
it's too
this
repetitive.
Is where I'm picking up.
Yeah.
Because they keep going... my mind flashed back to when, you know, like this happened. And I'm like, I don't need a flashback from the character.
Yeah.
I know that
feels,
that happened.
In instances like that, it almost feels like I'm being treated like I'm not a very clever reader.
Exactly. Like, I think they're spoon-feeding it to you. And it's annoying because I'm like, I don't understand it. I'm reading this book, and if I've missed that piece of information, right, you don't need to remind me of it. Like,
which is interesting as well because I read in, like, I'll read a book in a full sitting. So if it's telling me, like, well, I read that 2 hours ago.
2 hours ago.
Yeah.
I don't need to know that this is happening again. And that is a big pet peeve of mine. I do hate a bit of rehashing unless it is necessary for the emotional, like, conversation that the two characters are having. If somebody brings something up in a conversation, hell yeah.
Yeah,
give me some
or if the character is reflecting back on this specific thing hurts, like this specific event that you've already read is really relevant to this moment because I'm hurting because that happened, sort of
I'm
thing.
I'm hurting the same.
Yeah, the same as when that conflict. Like this other thing has happened, but it hurts because that's very similar to that other thing that happened.
And I found I've been doing it a fair bit in my writing because I'm doing this sprint, right?
Yeah, you're writing very
later,
quickly at the moment. Yeah.
I'm like... oh, damn it. I go past it and I go, don't fix Harry. Like, just we can fix this later. Maybe it works. Maybe there's a reason authors do it. Maybe this is what the editors are going to want me to do anyway. Mm. So keep it in there. But sometimes I go like, you know, oh, I'm still guilty about that secret. And I'm like, does he really need to be reminded? Like, does a reader really need to be reminded that the secret still
that
hasn't been revealed?
There are other ways that
you can
it's
say he's
guilty about it. Yeah.
And like in my book, it's a pretty big fucking secret. So I think the readers are going to be going this whole time like, oh, no, he's still not doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, still not doing it? I don't need to be reminded that he's constantly guilty, constantly anxious. And that kind of repetition when it comes to emotional connection, emotional, like, journeys with characters frustrates me a lot. Mm. Bride does it with Ellie Hazelwood as well. Mm. She's always flashing back to something that she's talking
it's
about.
Quite a lot, yeah.
And she's miserable to read.
Yeah.
What's another pet peeve of yours?
Another one of mine. Okay, hold on. Text in book.
Oh, no. I love text in book.
Really?
I do. I love it. I love
Why
it.
Why do you love it?
I love it.
I hate it.
It doesn't... it puts me further into what the character's seeing. So I think that when I'm watching a character text, that
you're
I know
like,
them.
I'm there.
I'm next to them in the driver's
you're
seat.
You're in there
I'm
and you're
standing
over
their shoulder
and you're
looking.
Out there. No, I hate it. I don't know if it's too, like... it's just... to me, it feels... I mean, I guess it's necessary in your modern books. It's too contemporary. It's too modern.
It is
like
very
I hate
contemporary.
When you've got like actual pictures of text messages going on in the book.
Oh, I don't know about. I wouldn't do pictures.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I love
but
a,
like,
I love a font change and a formatting change.
I hate it. I don't need to know the text conversation that is happening. I would
but what
rather
if the text conversation is important.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've got not a fair
maybe
bit
I
of
just
it.
Don't like a book that's got that has to communicate through text.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I don't know. For something about it just really irritates me. And I'm like, I feel like I'm reading a Wattpad book and I'm 12. Because that happens a lot in those.
Ellie Hazelwood does do a bit of texting in hers and some emailing. There's
emails,
actually a bit
that's
that.
A thing. I don't mind emails.
You don't mind emails?
Man, I'm sounding really millennial.
Yeah. Look, sorry. Nobody can see Abby's face right now. But the moment she's come to that realization, it was a full frown. Like, yeah. It was like, oh.
And I wish that you could see it, but our cameras died. Oh, so our cameras died.
Yeah, so this one's an invisible episode.
This episode's got no visuals
which
whatsoever.
Which will be fun.
Yeah.
So but if you don't like it, at least you can't see how much we're like moving around and laughing at each other. But yeah,
you can't see when I do this.
I like. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, as we flip everyone off.
Yeah. No.
I like her. I don't have an issue with it. I've got an email in my book. It's formatted the same as a text, but
emails
it's stated that it's an email.
I don't see. That's what.
But I like text. I do like.
I don't like text.
Hate.
Especially. Oh my god. Yeah. Especially when they're like using text speech. So it's like, BRB. Gotta do this.
Oh yeah,
okay?
I don't like that.
I hate it.
I've been putting like X's in the text messages.
Yeah, well, that's how
people
text. That's
how
you text. You
text,
yeah. Very much like that. I don't normally, but every time I text you, there's a little X on the end.
There is. I'm big on the like, yeah. An X to a person I love, just yeah. So that you know how I say it.
Yeah.
I'm also huge on the capital ha-has, which you did not do at the start, but now you do when you text me. You will.
I normally do them. I just don't when I start talking to someone.
Oh, okay.
You know, like
are
that. Ha,
yeah, I love that. I love that. Ow. Because I'm like, oh,
what
Jesus, you are caught
smack
in between.
I'm like in between a huge speaker and the microphone. I just smack my head on the speaker.
This is fun. We don't have to face the camera.
Yeah, we don't have to look at the camera. I can just look at you. I just feel
and
way
I feel
more
like
involved.
We're getting real unhinged and I'm loving it.
We really need to invest in a different setup.
We do, because this works so well.
It does. I understand
for
the
those
couch
of you that can't see, which
now.
Is everyone.
Yeah, we're now facing each other instead of the camera.
Instead of the camera, which is lovely.
It's a much better dynamic.
It's intimate.
It's quite intimate. It's quite, I feel like I have to look into Harry's eyes and I'm not quite sure how I feel about that.
No pickles being tickled.
No, oh God, no. No pickles being tickled here.
But yeah, no. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, yeah. The big ha-has. I'd take them out. I haven't got laughing
haven't
in my
got
text
those.
Messages
no.
in there. Because I feel
some
like that's lame.
I can't even remember the book that I read, but I did read a book that had text messages and you could see that they were pictures of text messages, like kind of graphics.
Okay.
And you could see the emojis they were sending each other.
Oh, I don't like that.
No.
That's millennial.
Yeah.
You know, that a big. Oh,
I mean,
I
send
know.
A few emojis. I'm a little, just a little bit.
You're not that big with the emojis when you text me.
No.
No.
No. When I text my mother.
I am an emoji with mother.
Yeah.
I am an emoji with my mum
yeah.
as well. I think
but that's because my mother sends me emojis and I feel like I have to match the energy. I will
yes.
match the energy of whoever
yes.
I'm texting.
That's so fair.
Yeah.
We're big on the caps texting to each other as well.
Full cap lots.
Full caps. Full caps.
Sheer excitement.
We are, yeah, like literally like screaming at each other about
yeah.
things.
Yeah,
but never
yeah.
angrily. Always like, did you see this?
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
How funny was that? Like,
yeah,
nudge,
yeah.
nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because I don't hate the text messages and I don't hate emails in things. I don't know how I'd like, I don't know if I've read a book where they've been formatted as such.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I'll see.
I'm yet to find one where
doesn't
I'm like.
Does Firestarter have text messages in it?
Firestarter?
Whoa, what's that called?
What the fuck is that?
Well, the icebreaker.
That sounds
worst
like the sound of
beatboxing ever.
I know. Do you remember that that show that came on when you were a kid? I don't know, because I watched ABC 3. You might have had Foxtel. You might have been a fancy rich kid. But there was that.
Soup opera?
Yes!
Yeah.
With the fruits.
Yeah.
Dum, boom, boom, dum, dum, dum. You were getting into that. Dum, 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 yeah, yeah, yeah. And the
that
fruits
was,
that cut themselves up
yeah,
make shapes and
cooked,
animals.
But
that
I loved
was
it.
Cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like 30 seconds in between thing. Yeah, yes,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you did that a lot better than I did. Yeah. A lot better.
Yeah.
But no, Icebreaker. Icebreaker and Wildfire.
That has text in it.
They have text
it?
In it, I think.
Oh,
yeah, I'm pretty sure
okay.
they have text messages.
See, I feel like it's definitely a modern contemporary thing. Maybe I just am against
contemporary. It's getting bigger.
Contemporary.
It's definitely getting bigger.
Maybe.
Book lovers had lots of emails.
Yeah.
See, oh. No, it didn't.
It didn't?
It avoided the emails by saying what she was emailing.
Oh. See,
I
would prefer that.
Darcy about this.
I would prefer that.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the email.
I'd have to
I would prefer,
again,
like,
I
shot, freaking, here, I'll just use you. I shot Harry a text about this. And he said this.
Yeah, quickly shoot Harry a text asking if he wants coffee after
our
meeting.
Yeah, I would prefer that.
I put my phone back in my pocket.
Yeah.
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 Super simple language.
Yeah.
That's fair. I've got like a whole chain of like a, not a whole chain, but a big email that was important to the plot that comes through.
Yeah.
So the email needed to be read out how it was. Or like, it needed to be formatted and written.
I guess that's
how
a good
received.
Way of doing it without like sounding like you're info dumping as well. Like, yeah, this is true. The actual email rather than me being like, and then I said this in the email, and you'd like list out the entire thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just feel like sometimes if I'm being told, like, I feel like when I'm writing out a text message, I'm showing the reader the text message as opposed to telling them what the text message was.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and then I can follow
maybe
it easier.
Maybe I can be convinced.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because I want to look at different examples of how it's done.
Yeah. I've never put a book down because I had a text in it.
Yeah. But you do go through the text and go, fuck's sakes, here it comes. Pretty much, here it is. Yeah. That's fair. I'll concede on that point that I don't love them.
Yeah.
But I am writing them.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that puts me. Yeah. I do it. I'm a hypocrite. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm a hypocrite.
I'm a hypocrite.
All right. Yeah. What's your next pet peeve?
My next pet peeve would probably be when now I'm going to get more romance specific.
Okay.
Or it can be fantasy as well. Descriptions of characters' body and like physical attributes upon first meeting them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Big pet peeve.
This is John, and John has green eyes and blonde hair, and 100%. He's so tall. And okay, you don't like that?
No, I think especially if it's in like a sexual manner.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to romance,
yep.
Like, and then I bumped into him, and he was the most gorgeous person I'd ever. You know, like no.
See, I do. I like.
I feel like if I've bumped into somebody, I go, "What the fuck?" And it does take me a second to process. I would fuck you.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I feel like because your romances are in first person perspective and they are all about the people in them, I feel it's necessary. When I bump into someone, I am assessing their assessing what they look like. Are you not?
If you walk into Abby, Abby's instantly like, yay or nay.
Yeah. I mean, but you bump into them, you're like, wow, he's a really tall person.
Yeah.
No?
I've gotten more comfortable with that, I think.
Okay.
In my relationship, my partner and I are very quick to go, did you just see that guy?
Yeah.
And we like, because we can talk about that quite comfortably with each other. We're allowed to, you know, not we're allowed to, because it's not a I didn't sign a fucking contract. I'm not an object.
Yeah, that gets told
what to do.
Yeah.
But we're comfortable doing that with each other, going, this person's really hot. And did you see that? Did you see this? Wow, that's good. But I don't think it's something that I do when I bump into somebody or meet somebody.
Right. Okay.
And it might be, maybe.
So how do you anticipate finding out what the character looks like then if you're not given a description up front?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like you would say, like the how the person talks, what the person's mannerisms are, like how you interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like even in a rom-com, you know, when it goes onto onto screen,
yes,
they skip those parts of the books because you can obviously see the person.
Yeah.
So you don't need them described to you.
Yeah.
And I feel like the adaptations of those conversations flow more smoothly and are more realistic.
Yeah.
Because I'm already looking at the person, so I don't need to be told that. And I'm not overly sure how I would get around
it
in a book.
I'm not sure how
I get around it straight away in a book. But I think sometimes when it's like, oh, this is exactly what he looks like, then you're like, oh, okay. Especially when it's in an attractive way. I find that odd that there's instant attraction based on physical attributes before the person's spoken to you.
Fair enough.
Think about Book Lovers when Nora meets Charlie.
Yeah.
She describes him as, you know, like dark haired, like a bit of a chiseled jaw.
Yeah.
And like a decent face structure.
Yeah.
But she's just broken up with her boyfriend on the phone, walks into the restaurant to have the meeting with him. And she says there's a dark haired gentleman staring. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so you know what he looks like.
Dark haired gentleman. So she sits down and talks to him and they begin the conversation. And then in her head, she's thinking about the relationship that's gone and then going, oh, he's not bad looking.
Okay.
But they've already met each other.
Right.
They've already begun the interaction.
Okay. I see what you're saying now. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Because if I bump into him in the hallway.
You're happy with descriptions of the characters.
Yeah.
In that like forward way, but you don't want it to happen the instant you meet
the
character.
It just shouldn't
be
the first thing.
You want it to be kind of woven into the interaction as it happens.
Because too often I think I'm reading, they bump into each other in a coffee machine and it's a line like.
In a coffee machine?
Oh, in a coffee machine, in a coffee shop. Shut the fuck up.
They bump into each other in a coffee machine?
In a coffee machine.
Wow.
They're tiny.
And they're coffee beans.
They're tiny.
And they've been in love forever.
And it's a metaphor the entire time for the roasting and murdering of coffee beans.
Yep.
But they'll bump into each other in a coffee shop and they go, and You know, like, say, let's go gay. Bumps into him, and then it's like, and let's I just go bumped gay. In, I bumped into the most gorgeous man I've ever seen in my entire life with diamond blue eyes and like, you know, frazzled blonde hair.
Right, okay.
And you're like,
you would much rather, and then I bumped into him and I almost spilt my coffee and yeah. I like couldn't leans, see, you know.
Yeah. He leans down to pick up the coffee cup
and
says, can I get you a napkin?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so frazzled that I don't know what, you know, like I say yes or I blurt out something stupid because that's funny in rom-coms.
That's what happens in rom-coms, yeah.
Just typical stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I realize that it's all over my fucking shirt and this is bloody awful. I've had the worst fucking day of my life. He turns around, like, gives me the napkins.
You know.
And I go,
yeah.
You know, I say, thank you so much. And then I have a double take and go, fuck, he's gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Okay. Yeah. 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 On the opposite of this, I hate when the main character isn't described at all.
Yes.
Like you don't really, you get like a kind of it, like it might be mentioned on the fly that she has blonde hair.
Yeah.
For
but
example.
You don't really know don't what any really, of these people look like.
Yeah. You don't really have any sense of what, particularly like the main lead character that from a first person perspective, and you're like, I know it's difficult, for, like you don't want to do the whole classic. I look in a mirror in the morning and I put on my black sweater and my blue eyes stare back at me. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to do that.
They do that so much in indie published books.
It is, yeah. Because it's a very Wattpad thing.
It's so Wattpad,
I
do my makeup. Yeah.
And you don't want to do that. But I don't like when they're so nondescribed because it feels like you were definitely trying to do what Twilight did, where Bella is such a flat character that you can insert yourself into the situation.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't...
Cheap trick.
Yeah, I don't enjoy it.
I don't enjoy it as well. Yeah. I feel that. You know, in The Lord of the Rings, that barely any of the characters are so properly described that there is no description whatsoever of Legolas having blonde hair.
Oh, really?
You barely know what he looks like.
Just but it works elf. In that context. Yeah. I don't think anyone's ever had any issue with
interesting.
That.
Yeah. It is a big topic of discussion, though, when people talk about Lord of the Rings. They go, like, why did they make them look like that in the movie? Because there's really not that many descriptions of them.
There's nothing to say about that. Yeah.
There are some characters that are described. But it is an interesting point because everybody thinks that there's so much information in that book that you would have.
It's almost, I feel like you just leave out so much about the character so it could be, like, anyone could be in that position. And, you know, this could be you.
This could be you, yeah.
And I don't love that.
I don't think it works unless the romance is designed as that self-insert.
Yeah.
I think it
unless
should be
it's
a,
built that way.
Yeah, a practical decision that's made by the author.
Yeah.
Not one based on laziness, which I do think sometimes it comes with not a fully fleshed character.
And if you're going to do it well. Don't make it obviously lazy.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think you're like, right. It is quite common.
Yeah.
That you know that she has brown hair.
Yeah. And that's it.
And he says he has hazel eyes before he kisses her.
He says, hello, ma'am, I have hazel eyes. Oh, no. And then he goes in for a kiss. Like
he says she has hazel eyes.
I have hazel eyes.
Fuck her up.
Fuck her up. Really sell it.
You just keep pulling. Oh, I'm speaking so poorly in this episode.
Oh, I wish the camera was on.
Yeah, I know,
really
right?
Do.
We're
really
we're
do.
Moving like reptiles. We're like,
like reptiles.
Like chasing the sun.
Gosh. Okay, okay.
What's another one of your pet peeves?
Okay, you're pulling them out of your head. Oh, here we go. When a book doesn't have a blurb. You've never picked up a book.
Picked up a book without a blurb.
There are so many books, particularly hardback books, I find, where they've got like that fake cover on them.
Oh, yeah.
And you pick up the book and you turn it over and there's no blurb. It's just like quotes from people quoting about the book.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, it's just like this book was the best thing since sliced bread. And then like there's nothing about what
it's funny because that's not an exaggerative attempt at an endorsement because that's what some of them are like.
Yeah.
Like it's genuinely put this down.
Yeah. All you get are it's always Stephen King.
Yes.
Every time I turn a book over, Stephen King is telling me that I should read it.
Well, on the other
hand. I just meant the endorsements are always Stephen King.
On the other side, I hate a book with a huge blurb.
Yes.
I should not be reading over a small paragraph.
I should not be reading the entire synopsis.
No way. Stephen, old Kingy, he's very big on a big blurb.
Yeah.
Very big. Fairy Tale's got a whopper on the back of it.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, all right, should I read this book or have you just told me everything's going
to
happen?
I want it to take me less than 2 minutes to read it in the bookstore.
Easily. Yeah. I should be flying through book purchases. And if you've got a snappy little one-liner, elevator pitch, give it to me.
Yeah.
If it's successful, I'm putting it in my basket.
Yeah, but I don't want nothing. I hate when it's just endorsements. I don't even read endorsements. I don't know about you.
I don't read endorsements. No. I don't read them because I know. We know what that's like.
We know
the process of endorsements. And it's really like, hey, do you just mind saying this book good?
Yeah. Here's my book. Yeah. Do you mind like saying something nice about it? Please, thank you.
Yeah.
And then you just pull a line from it. Yeah. Yeah. So I really want a blurb. I would rather you tell me a little bit about what the book is.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I feel like I'm just buying books based on what I've seen online and I'm not buying, I can't, like, it makes it way harder to walk into a bookstore and just read the back of it and be like, yeah, you know what? I want
to
read that.
Do they tend to have really intense covers if they don't have a blurb?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I can't even think of an example.
I'm wondering now to like, if I go and have a look, if I pick up a very intricate looking book cover, I'll turn it around and what the likelihood is that it doesn't have a blurb and that they've put all of that into the book cover.
Yeah.
Being like, this book's pretty, buy it. What's it about? We don't want to tell you.
We don't want to tell you. Yeah. It's aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Some of them have the blurb on the inside of the front cover.
I was just about to say, is there a prelude? Which is a short little.
Some of them have the blurb, on the inside of the front cover. But these ones I'm talking about specifically have no blurb.
Interesting.
There is just nothing to describe what the book is about.
I find that I hate a subtitle on a book. For starters.
Oh, do you?
I hate it.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, what's the book cover? Like, what's the book called?
Yeah,
it's called this?
Right.
Lovely. I don't want to be like book lovers, and then a little subtitle going, a small town romance for all favourite fans. Like, I don't need that. It's called book lovers. Show me on the book and in the blurb what the story's about.
Yeah.
Leave the rest relatively simple for me. I should make the decision. I don't want you categorising me and being like, this is for you because you love small town romance. Like, show
Whereas
it to me.
I don't mind that because if I pick it up and it's like for lovers of small town romance, I'm like, me? I love small town romance. I will take that book.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a
very market.
Niche
these
way
are
of
all these are all marketing aspects that we're saying.
But this is good because we say whether or not we like it or not. Like marketers, stop. We don't
put
like
a blurb
this.
On your fucking book.
Put a blurb on your book. Yeah. Remove your subtitles.
But they're just I don't want to have to read the first page of the first chapter to know if I want to take it home. I just want to read the blurb. But
that's fair. I'm very big on the blurb.
Yeah.
I'm very big on that. Yeah. And I think it's effective when done right. It will make me buy the book.
Blurbs, but yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that I don't overly enjoy is a prologue or prelude. I don't want an area like a – I don't want the start of the book to give me information that the book should tell me itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I get that. I like prologues in things like fantasy and high fantasy where you're getting a bit of information that the book won't tell you.
No, that's
fair. But it feels a little crucial. I don't enjoy – like, for example, Ninth House. Bless me.
Bless me, Lord.
Help. The Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo has a prologue in it.
Okay.
And it is a snippet of a scene from later in the book, like really towards the end of the book. And so the character that you meet is like all bloody and like it's kind of indicated that they've got bite marks on them, blah, blah, blah. And then it dives into the novel.
So then you find out what's going on.
Yes.
To reach
so
that point.
I loved that because I spent the whole novel like, how are we going to get to this point where she's all bloody and
okay,
like,
that's fair. Yeah.
I liked that as a prologue.
Yeah.
I felt like it was an effective way of enticing me to keep reading because
it's a lengthy book.
It's quite a lengthy book and it's quite dense. Yeah. So it was an effective way of keeping my attention.
I like that when it comes to crime.
Yes, but I don't know for romance.
But I don't know about romance. Yeah. And I like it for fantasy, but I don't, but not if the world's not big enough to justify it.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
There are, like I'd say, The Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. That has a little prologue-y prelude thing at the start of it.
Yeah, prelude.
And I don't think that the book needed that in the first half.
Okay.
I don't think it was necessary.
Yeah, you'd rather just dive straight
I'd rather just dive straight in. Am I correct in saying that ACOTAR also had one?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't quote you
on
that. Yeah,
I can't remember if it did or not.
I can't remember, yeah.
Obviously, The Lord of the Rings has
I
them.
I think things like, maybe it's because in your romances, it's so character-driven. Like, I just want to dive into that character's head. So you get this piece of information that's got nothing to do with the character, and then you're shoved into the character. Does that make sense?
And I just feel like I shouldn't, when it comes to something like romance or when it comes to something like historical fiction, it shouldn't, I shouldn't need incentive to keep reading your book.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I feel
if your novel hasn't started interesting, then you've probably started at the wrong point in the novel, right?
And sometimes they feel like they've been attached on the front after the book's been finished writing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it feels like a
dreary start here. So what we're going to do is we're going to prop the prologue in to keep them interested in reading.
Mm.
And that doesn't work.
Mm.
The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Okay.
Great start to that book.
Beautiful that's start. Got a that's little not prologue. Is that a prologue?
I don't know if it is or not.
Or just a really short first chapter.
Yeah, that's also interesting.
But that is very much like, that's kind of like what Ninth House did.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Because it's like here's this
terrible thing happened. How did we get to this point? Yeah, yeah. Bunny is dead, which I can say because that's how the novel starts.
Yeah.
Is it Bunny?
It's Bunny.
Dies?
Yeah. I was about to say Snow Bunny and then I went, no, you're right. It is just Bunny. Yeah.
Is it Bunny?
It's Bunny that dies. Dead?
He's in the snow.
Found on the cliff.
Maybe that's where you. Yeah.
The Stand by Stephen King.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Great start to a book.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it might be this. I think it's The Stand. I can't quite recall. There's one where it's like
Stephen King does really good intros, really terrible endings.
You have all these people in a car and they're like, oh, I feel like I'm misquoting this, but I'm going to go for it anyway. They you get attached to all of these characters at the start of this novel and you like meet them and they're described and you have all their interactions and then bam, they die in a car crash at the end of the first
prologue. That is a Stephen King.
And then
I know it is. You get attached to these characters and then he kills them.
And then at the start of the first chapter, you're like, okay, now there's all this other stuff that's happening.
Yeah,
and I think it might be The Stand, which is the one with the plague.
Right.
The respiratory like virus that stands over everybody.
Yeah.
Start of that book. Mm. And you're like, fuck, this is good.
But that's the genre as well, right?
That's the genre. And I think that's what I mean. It works for that crime and thriller and suspense. Mm. It can work for fantasy, but it doesn't always work for fantasy. But I don't generally, as a rule, like them. Mm. Because I don't think that they're all well done.
Yeah. I agree.
And that... That can pull me away from starting that first, diving head on into the book.
Mm.
Because I'm always like, well, I would have liked to have not known that was happening. I would have liked to have learned it.
Yeah.
Rather than just be told it at the start.
Told it at the beginning. Yeah. Fair enough.
So that kind of draws me out of it.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
Oh my gosh. Do I have it? Oh, we spoke about this a little bit in the previous episode. This will be our last one, I think, because we're getting to time.
Oh my god, this has gone so fast.
I know, Jesus. So quick. But I hate lines like she held a breath, like she released a breath that she didn't realize she was holding.
I hate
you're really cliche.
I hate cliche similes as well.
Yeah,
my mind whirled like a tornado.
Yeah,
you know, like give me something gosh new.
This is kind of on theme, but not when you have a simile like that and it doesn't work for the world that you're in, for fantasy.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's too modern.
It's too modern.
It's too modern that you're like, you've come up with that and that's not just, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think Brandon Sanderson was talking about how in one of his novels, there's a line he was going to write, you know, was light as a feather. And then he went, this world doesn't have birds. So they wouldn't know what as light as a feather means.
How the hell
means.
Would they know this
so now
is,
he has to come up with a new simile that's different to as light as a feather.
Well, it's like what Amy says all the time. She says that when she's developing a character, she tries to find out how they would curse.
Yeah, right.
And
okay.
I always like to think when I'm building a fantasy world, what would the similes be like? What would the generic language be like for this region of people? Because we obviously have dialect and colloquial language that we use all the time.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So what would it be like for them? And exactly what Sanderson's saying. They've got birds, so they wouldn't use light as a feather.
Yeah.
You know? Or what do you say? I could eat a horse. Like that's quite common.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. There's no fucking horses here.
You can't eat a fucking horse. Yeah. Not to mention that I don't know if they go and say that in other parts of the world. So make yours for the world that you're in.
That you're in. I agree.
And I think that that goes for romance as well.
Mm.
I think if you're in a specific place or a specific not just social class, but the context of that, it's important to realize what they would and wouldn't say.
Yeah.
And that can take me out of it as well. A poor simile is so, or a cliche simile.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts.
As I said, even just a cliche line, like I released a breath that I didn't realize I was holding. Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's been done. As I said, I feel like it's a joke now. I feel like everyone's in on it.
And they're just doing it.
You've got to put it in there.
They're doing it for a laugh.
Yeah. There's got to be a better way to say that.
That does it. Yeah. So just dwell on it for a bit.
Yeah, hey, I'm trying to think of a better way to say it.
The love of God.
Yeah. Just,
and yeah, I feel like those types of things make me realize that there wasn't. But again, see, we know what the editing process is like, and the editors and the publishers might have decided against something and told them to just pop in things like that because it's easy to consume. But I find them a bit cheap and nasty. Not that everything needs to be innovative, but there are some things that can be made that little bit better. Just simply by thinking, oh, it's a bit of an annoying cliche. I'm not going to use whirlwind or tornado or the other thing is when somebody's like emotional reaction does not fit what their biological response is like.
Yeah.
Like somebody going, oh, I'm feeling sick so my eyes became blurry. I'm like, what sickness have you got?
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, when I'm feeling anxious, I don't, you know, like, well, I mean, I don't.
Yeah, as I said, it's your experience of it. It's my experience. Evidently. I was just looked up because, and I feel like we like hate on Sarah J. Maas all the time, but I'm using it as an example because everybody knows of the book. It's so huge in the current moment and it's relevant. But she uses a line in a lot of her work. I think it's in the Throne of Glass series as well, where she talks about a character picking invisible lint off their jackets.
What?
Like it always says, like, I picked off, you know, an invisible piece of lint, or like he brushed.
Oh, like an anxious thing.
Just
for the sake of brushing.
But it happens all the time.
Interesting. What
Constantly.
The hell?
Constantly. Yeah.
I've never picked up on that.
Or like my toes curled.
Yeah.
That happens all the
toes
time.
Toes curling.
Well.
People grimacing. Like lumps in throats. Why does that always happen?
This person said that folks never walked in a quart of silver. ACOSF. What's that one?
A quart.
Of silver flames?
Yeah, silver flames.
That's the one.
Yeah.
It said they aimed themselves in the direction.
Oh, yeah, see? See? Oh, my God. It's those types of things. I have found that when I'm writing, my characters are turning or spinning a lot. And I'm like, why are they turning and spinning?
Yeah.
I spun to face him. I'm like, well, I could have just said, like, you know, I looked at him. And if I know I'm facing this way, the reader knows full well that I'm turning behind to look at the next person. Yeah.
So
I don't need to explain that.
Cliches,
and they work. But, like, they're...
Sometimes they really, really pull me out of the novel.
I also hate exaggerated speech, like the ways that people say things.
Oh.
I don't need to know that you screamed or yelped or cried or,
Or murmured.
Just say said. Or There's design the sentence around the way that you don't need to say who was saying it.
Yes. That was something that we learnt very much, I think, in our undergrad degree. Because
100%.
When you first come in as a
active
new writer,
sentences.
You're always, active sentences. And, like, I think... During high school, you're always told you can't use said, like, way too often.
But
said
you can.
Is a word that a reader will blur over.
Yeah,
it's an invisible word. It's an invisible word. And so you may as well use it other than, you know, moaned, groaned.
That is one thing that Hazelwood did quite well of in Bride, I thought.
Yeah.
There's a lot of said
when
you actually look for it.
Yeah,
you don't really.
You don't realise it as you're reading.
Dialogue. Nothing else under it.
Yes.
Nobody's saying who said it, what said it, how it worked.
But it's set up so that you know who has said that
exactly.
line.
And it's very, very well done. Indie published novels are huge on the, I quizzed, I replied.
I replied.
I murmured.
Yeah.
I screamed.
Which
grumbled.
I think is just like an edit thing.
It's an edit.
You just go through
exactly.
after and you edit out the unnecessary.
And you just make all those sentences more active.
Yeah.
But that does annoy me because I'm always like, oh, wow, there's a lot of emotions and a lot of dialects and tones in this conversation that we're having
on.
Right now. Because now he's grumbling and now he's moaning and now she's screaming and now she's crying.
Yeah.
And she said tearfully. I'm like, okay, he just broke up with her. You don't need to describe to me that she said it tearfully because... She's probably crying, right? Or like she's already crying.
Yeah.
It's the second time Abby's assaulted herself with the speaker.
This is not a position for me to be sitting in.
Again, anyway, this episode has gone on so quickly and so fast. And I'm sorry if we were just murmuring away or grumbling
or
groaning
grumbling
to you.
Or grumbling
or,
the whole time.
Yeah. Any other little hyperbolized word or exaggeration?
Hisses.
If Abby hisses.
My teeth too much.
Or laughed. But thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Whiny Writers. This has been another long one. We've just been sitting here having a lovely chat.
Yeah.
And please let us know if you've got any pet peeves about things that make you put down a book. Pet peeves that you just roll over but you see far too much.
Yeah.
Or what about in a good optimistic light, things you love that are in books?
Yes, we
yeah, we'll do one about loving as well. We'll do one about
things we love. We are not always negative people.
Not always negative, but we did think that we should start with a bit of whining because that is what we do best.
That is what we do best.
So thank you again for listening to another episode of The Whiny Writers, and we will chat to you next week.
Thank you.
Bye.